Welcome back to The Lead, a podcast about content marketing by Copyblogger Media, hosted by me, Jared Morris, and my golden-haired copywriting co-host, Damian Farnworth. The Lead is sponsored by Authority Rainmaker, Copyblogger's live training event that will provide you with an integrated online marketing strategy combined with the best ways to implement it, plus great parties and networking, as you would expect from any event hosted by Copyblogger. Among the esteemed folks who will be taking the stage and sharing their experience, Henry Rollins, Daniel Pink, Sally Hogshead, Danny Sullivan, Ann Hanley, and so many more, including me, which as you might imagine, I am quite excited about. So come see us in May in Denver, learn lessons, and make contacts that will take your online marketing to the next level. For details, go to authorityrainmaker.com. Okay, today's episode begins a two-part series during which Damian and I are going to use some of our best and worst professional moments to teach important micro and macro lessons that will hopefully help you with your online marketing and just your work and your life in general. And yes, it is a series inspired by recent events, namely a gigantic oversight by me that led to an embarrassing mistake when I was recording a podcast, an audio that sounded like this. Awful. Unless, of course, some good came from it. I think it did. See what you think now in the latest episode of The Lead. Damian, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Jared. I'm looking forward to tomorrow.
Yeah, so for those of you listening to this, we are recording this the day before our Copyblogger company meeting occurs, where all Copyblogger folks from all across the world are meeting in Dallas, Texas. So when this actually airs a week from today, next Tuesday, that meeting will be done. But I'm looking forward to it, Damian. We don't get to see each other that often, and it'll be good to be able to spend some time in person together.
Yeah, it's always nice to see people, you know, face to face. You've been, through Skype and email, and you finally get to shake their hand, hug their backs, and stuff like that. So, looking forward to it, man.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. So, as we're starting a new series here, as I introduced at the beginning of this episode, where basically we're going to use our personal stories of both success and failure to teach some important online marketing lessons, both in a macro sense and a micro sense. And we're going to start today with mistakes. Because obviously, you know, it's kind of that old cliche, you know, you learn more from your failures than your successes. In the next episode, we'll talk about how you know, there are very important lessons to learn from your successes as well. But I think, you know, we don't have to spend too much time making the case for how much you can learn from mistakes. And so, you know, yesterday we were talking about what we wanted to do for this episode. And I just happened to make a gargantuan mistake yesterday that kind of led me to thinking about this. And I was glad you were excited about the idea, too. but
it wasn't the copy booger, was it?
No, it wasn't that one.
Okay.
No, we'll get to that one in a minute. No.
Great.
So I host this podcast called Podcast on the Brink for the site Inside the Hall. It's one of my side projects, you know, big right. Indiana basketball fan. So I host this podcast for them. And so yesterday we were recording a new episode, and so, you know, everything's going great. We record the episode. It all, you know, went really well. I thought, you know, had some, you know, some great questions, and the conversation was really good, and I'm just feeling spectacular about this episode of the podcast, you know, once I was done recording it.
Right.
And so, now here comes the but. So I open up the audio file before I'm going to put it in GarageBand. And my audio just sounds really distant, really echoey, and my heart just sinks.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh, no. And so I look to the left, and my microphone is not plugged in to my computer.
So are you kidding me?
No. So the only thing picking up my audio was just the computer mic. And obviously, if that had been just me doing a monologue, or even if it had been us doing it, I would have re-recorded it, but this is an interview with somebody else who, you know, kind of fitted into their schedule and couldn't exactly just re-record.
Right.
So the good thing is that the audio was bad, but it wasn't so bad that we couldn't run it. I mean, you know, clearly there would be a certain level where you just can't run it. But I decided, okay, you know, it's a little bit embarrassing for me to put this out there, but it's still, you know, for the audience, it's still really good information. It's still a good interview. So I think it's still worth it to put it out there. I've just got to kind of fall on my sword a little bit. And so, you know, I tried to think, okay, this mistake happened. Now, what can I do to make sure it doesn't happen again? And so, and that I think is kind of going to be a theme with the mistakes I talk about, which are kind of specific things that happen kind of, you know, and you know, kind of in a micro sense, and what can you do to help prevent them? So now on my microphone, I've got this little post-it note that says, plug me in, you jackwagon. So that way, every time I record,
looking at mine, making sure it's plugged in too. Yeah.
Every time I record, I have to obviously talk into the mic. Yeah. And so now I'll have to see it, and it'll remind me to plug it in. You know, and I also thought, you know, look, I can't just let this audio go out there this bad because people have come to expect a certain level. It's really going to throw them off. So in the intro that I do for that show, you know, I just made a note that, hey, you know, I just told him what happened. I was like, you know, brain fart by me. I forgot to plug this in. So the audio you're about to hear is not what you normally expect. It's not up to usual standards, but the content is still good enough. We wanted to play it for you anyway. Yeah. So, and it's not terrible. So I think you'll still enjoy it. You know, and then I also sent out a tweet that said, hey, you know, the next time I criticize IU's coach or any of the players for something they do on the floor, just send me a tweet that says, hey, idiot, remember that time you forgot to plug in your microphone?
The microphone, so, right.
You know, it's a little opportunity for self-deprecation. And, you know, so I hope in the end it sucks because I hate putting a podcast out there that doesn't have audio that at least meets a basic minimum level of quality.
Yeah.
But hopefully it's a chance to, you know, I think it's even a chance to be a little human in front of your audience, you know, have that moment of self-deprecation. Right. Hopefully the system I've put in place now will help. I think that's the big theme here, Damon, that we're going to talk about is when you do make a mistake, okay, it sucks. Number one, how do you own it? And number two, how do you grow from it?
Right.
And so I think if you can do those two things with each mistake, you know, it can make them a positive in the long run.
Yeah, I think that, you know, an event like that reminds us that we're human and humbles us, you know, and that's, I think, the proper response to it. But here's the thing, all right? So say, like, your audio side was just totally, it wasn't there. You could have flipped that into, like, an episode of Space Ghost Coast to Coast where you then asked, like, bizarre questions, and then the other person answers it, and it's like, where did that come from? What does that mean? So, and that would have been hilarious. Maybe you can do that as a blooper someday down the road.
That would have been awesome. I should have thought of that.
Well, you still have the file, so you can do it again, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Okay, so let's go over to you, Damon. You're the first mistake that you want to kind of lay bare and discuss what you learned from it.
Yeah, so I think probably mine would be one of the first ones is staying in a job too long. So there was a job that I had. It's an interesting job. It's probably one of the most interesting jobs I ever had because I actually worked for a television evangelist. And, you know, we all know the feelings we have for such things. But I got the job because I needed a job at the time. And I was offered a, you know, pretty interesting and sweet position, and so I took it. But within like in no time, I should say, I don't know, I was there I think a total of 5 years, or maybe it was 3.5, I think, but I stayed there 18 months too long. And it was because of the sort of the security I got from having a job, security I had from, you know, the pay that I was getting, the benefits that I got were great. So it was kind of like that golden handcuff situation, but I was absolutely miserable. And what I allowed myself to do is to be carried away by the good things instead of saying, okay, this is just a bad situation. No, I didn't enjoy going to the job. The people I loved working with the people. And you know, I was a managing editor at this time, and I had a stable of 6 writers and 3 proofreaders. And I loved mentoring them. And I loved coaching them and sort of building them up. But everything else outside of that was just no fun. And it eventually took me to a point where I just had a collision with management. And like, this is the point when I said, like, I'm just done. I need to quit. Otherwise, I'm just going to like continue to hang on to this job and make mistakes. So at that point there, I walked away from that knowing, okay, because, you know, at that point, this was in April of 2011. I just quit that job without any plan B, without any exit plan, and went into the freelance world, which we'll talk a little bit later on. But I walked away from that thinking, you know what, you know, because I'm a loyal guy, right? I like to be loyal, and so, but I can be loyal to a fault, right? But there are times where you have to have the sort of the courage, and you have to say, okay, enough of the security thing. My life, the quality of my life is miserable. So I need to make a change. And so I need to be more aware of myself and be, you know, aware of those signs and sort of deal with those signs early so I don't let things get out of hand. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Could that even be, could you even take a lesson for that in terms of strategy? You know, something that you're doing that, you know, you're kind of comfortable with, but
yeah.
Maybe just it doesn't feel right. But at some point, you just got to say, hey, we've got to shift gears. We've got to do something else because this just doesn't feel right.
Right, exactly. I mean, it could be a lot of things, like, you know, the design theme of your website. It could be, you know, an autoresponder you need to update, but you're just like, it works, and I don't have time, or I don't want to deal with it, whatever. But, you know, I think the lesson walk away is to deal with problems as soon as you can.
So you talking about switching jobs is a nice segue into my second mistake, which you actually alluded to earlier, because there was a moment several months ago when I thought I might be looking for a new job. because when we send out emails right now, I'm the last person who touches that email, who actually hits send, who schedules emails. And at Copyblogger, we send out emails to lists of, you know, is 150,000 people big. I mean, these are, you know, mass emails that are going out to a lot of people. And, you know, they'll go out to different lists. So, you know, Studio Press lists and my copy blogger and Rainmaker. And so for each one of those, obviously the from and the from name and the from address are different. So we have to specify those.
Right.
Well, unfortunately, the L button on my laptop sticks.
Mm.
Even more unfortunately, there's an L prominently featured in the word copy blogger. So I was getting ready to do, I was setting up this email to our My Copy Blogger list, which has, you know, about 150,000 people on it. And so I, you know, type in Copy Blogger as I normally do and, you know, kind of check through all the other things and send it out. And mind you, we'd already done test emails on this, but when you actually set up the email to send, you have to do that again. So that part isn't saved from the test.
Right.
So you have to, again, kind of, you know, type it in manually. So I'm on all of these lists just so I can see the emails when they actually go out live. And so an email hits my inbox and the from says copy bogger.
Mm.
And again, it was that heart sinking feeling of you have got to be kidding me. And the thing is, you know, look, on a podcast, when you just record it privately, you have the decision, hey, I can now decide if I want to put this out there to the world and show them, you know, this moronic moment of mine, or I can just keep it private. With this, it was already out there.
Right.
And so, you know, there's nothing I could do to change it. And really, this isn't particularly a spot where you can necessarily, you know, where self-deprecation is going to do any good. Although I guess I'm doing that right now for everybody. But really, it was more, you know, I was terrified, obviously, of what, you know, Brian and Robert and everybody's going to think about this. Like, who is this idiot that we have, you know, sending out these emails? And so I'm thinking, okay, what, you know, what can I do with this? And, you know, my first thought is, okay, you know, my stupid computer, the L thing signal, but it's like, okay, that's just shifting the blame from what the problem was. The problem is I just don't have a good enough system in place to double check myself on this.
Right.
And, you know, I think it's a point when something like this happens, you have to have a little bit of self-compassion. Say, look, you're not an idiot. You're not a failure. You know, this mistake could have happened to anybody, but it doesn't need to happen again. Right. So, you know, and so that's why, you know, instituted some systems of not just double checking, but triple checking the little envelope part to make sure all of that is spelled correctly. And actually, I even went to the level of instead of typing in copy blogger when I'm on my laptop, I just copy paste it from a known source. You know, I'm a little OCD about it now.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, you kind of put some processes in place that protect yourself because, you know, when you have, you know, 20 different things to check, things can slip through the cracks. And, you know, no reason to beat yourself up, but it is a good opportunity to say, hey, what can I do better to make sure this doesn't happen again? So I did that. Fortunately, knock on wood, haven't had another similar situation like that. And
it's good.
Hopefully that continues.
Right. It's the old adage, right? You can make a mistake, just don't make it twice.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So there's my second mistake. Damien, over to you now for your second.
So, yeah, so kind of as continuation of the story of, you know, when I quit that job with the television evangelist, I started working for myself. And so as a freelance copywriter, you will find that there's an abundant amount of work to be done in the ghostwriting industry. So lots of CEOs, lots of just people, companies want, and you know, want you to create content in their name, and some of it paid really well. And I found myself in the situation getting more and more, and I eventually developed where almost 90% of my income was based upon ghost work, ghostwriting work. And it was almost exclusively for one person too. And it wasn't so much that person, it was just the work itself, because I realized, and I walked away from that situation because I did a lot of this type of work and I got no credit for it. I got paid pretty good for it, but I got no credit for it. And I realized, if like, because I had spent 9 months and I wrote probably like 200 and I think it was 36 articles in that 9 months, which amounts to a little bit over like 5 a week. And these weren't pushover posts. These were like of the 1500 word variety. So I had invested a lot of energy, time, into them. And so, but I got no credit for that. No professional equity out of that, except for the money and the reputation with, you know, the particular person I was working with. And, you know, he did recommend me onto other people, but I found with my own self, I was like not at all happy doing that work. I realized, I looked at myself and I said, you know, it's okay that you want recognition. It's okay that you want, you don't want to be anonymous in doing this type of work. That's just part of who you are. That's part of how you view payment, right? Because I enjoy that feedback that I get and it spurs me on to create better and better content. But if I'm doing it for somebody else and they're getting all the credit, then that just like drove me nuts.
What's the big kind of lesson that you take from that moving forward?
So just to recognize that it's okay to want recognition, to recognize that it's okay to say, hey, you know what, I feed off of and the attention that I get from other people. When people say great job, that really spoke to me. When people share it, that sort of thing is okay, you know, because that's what I was missing. I was not getting, you know. Patrick Lencioni, he wrote a book called The 5 Signs of a Miserable Job. And three signs of a miserable job. Those signs are anonymity, irrelevance, and immeasurements. And so what he means by that, like that you're not noticed, right? You're ignored. And then nobody really cares about you. And then like what you do, you can't measure your performance. And so I was missing those three things in that particular work, even though I was getting paid well for it. I didn't know those particular articles were doing, and they all did fairly well, but it didn't tie back to me. And I didn't feel very valued in the sense of people knew that I was writing that. Of course, I wasn't writing. You know, I was not the one who was getting all the traffic, who was getting all the attention, who was getting all the comments, who was getting all that sort of, you know, the equity that comes behind creating all those articles. And so I just walked away from that, saying that that's okay that I felt that way, and it's okay to sort of desire those things because I'm built in such a way that I'm a words of encouragement type of guy. That's what spurs me on, and that's what kind of lights a fire underneath me. And that's okay. You know, that's totally okay. And so I walked away from it, and I have never done ghostwriting work since then.
Yeah, and it wasn't necessarily serving your overall big picture goal, and it wasn't serving your motivation, certainly. And so, you know, it just wasn't really destined to be a positive long-term activity. And,
right.
You know, you
absolutely
gotta move on to something else that's going to be.
That's right.
Very good. So here's another one of mine. I actually changed this up kind of last minute, and it's another recent one. It's another recent one that just happened. Monday was Martin Luther King Day, or last Monday, I guess, when people actually listen to this. And so, you know, so we had a post scheduled to go out on Monday. Well, normally on holidays like Martin Luther King Day and Veterans Day and Labor Day and Christmas, obviously, you know, we don't put out posts that are, you know, centered around content marketing or promotions,
right,
or anything like that. It's really just something simple to either honor the day or nothing.
Right.
And so we had this post all ready to go, had completely just gone over my head, had totally forgotten, that it was Martin Luther King Day. Both Steffi and I, we just hadn't even thought about it. And so we get an email.
I hadn't thought about it either.
Yeah.
By the way.
And so, you know, so we get an email late Sunday night that, hey, you know, we shouldn't be running this on Monday. And, you know, late Sunday night doesn't give you a whole lot of time to scramble. Plus, you know, we had agreed to put that post out there, you know, around a date, you know, for the guy who was, you know, doing something for a launch.
Right.
And, You know, so it was kind of a, oh crap, you know, we gotta figure something out. And so, you know, in that case, again, I think it's best to just, instead of, you know, burying your head in the sand and not doing anything, you know, take action right away, you know, and meet the problem head on. Well, I mean, we contacted the author and just, you know, made sure that, you know, moving his post to Tuesday was going to be okay. And everything was still, you know, in line with, you know, with the launch, and that was all fine. And so we just, you know, we shuffled up the calendar. So, you know, so that worked well. Now, you know, it might not have, and we may have had to, you know, I mean, we weren't going to run anything on that day, but it might have, you know, made us kind of go back on something that we had committed to, which you never want to do. You know, so more importantly, it's okay. We got to make sure this doesn't happen again. And that's it. You know, that's an easy thing. It's an easy thing to make a mistake on because you get in the hustle bustle of every day. And, you know, if your editorial calendar doesn't have the holidays listed on it, it can be easy to overlook, but it's also something easy to fix, which again, like you said, you know, making the mistake the first time isn't the big deal. It's if you make it the second time, because then you clearly didn't learn anything.
Right. So, I'm guessing you guys went in then and on the editorial calendar, put in all the holidays for this year.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Amen. Just so we have them in there, because when we're scheduling, that's what we're looking at. So it needs to be there. It doesn't do us any good if it's on our, you know, personal or professional calendars. It's got to be in there on the editorial calendar. You know, and so, you know, those little things, you know, on one of his recent episodes of the Rainmaker FM, you know, Brian Clark talked about the importance of details and the little things and how you never know which detail or which little thing is going to make a difference, but in the aggregate, they're so important.
Yep.
And so, you know, there are going to come times you're always going to miss little details, but, you know, if you can learn from them, shore it up, put a process in place around it, you know, now you've eliminated that detail from becoming an issue in the future, hopefully, and you progressively get better at adding all of those little details up so that in the aggregate they can really help make you successful. So that was another one. And you know, fortunately we have a responsive team that even on Sunday night, you know, when something bad happens, we'll mobilize into action to get everything fixed, you know. So kudos to Stephanie for that. You know.
And of course, I think it helps too. You know, we don't have a culture of fear. We know that, you know, we'll probably get an email, that was stupid, don't do that again.
Right.
But you know, but we're not fearful in any sense. So it allows us to, you know, take risks and to do things around. Because otherwise, you know, if it's like if you're in a culture of fear, what you end up doing is asking for permission and everything, and that is a bureaucratic nightmare. And you want to avoid that at all costs. So
yeah, you know, and it's funny that you mentioned that, because we went to this team turnaround summit last week, and that was one of the big things that Annie talked about at the summit, was, you know, having a culture of safety so that people on a team are feel safe coming and saying, hey, you know, I made this mistake or this happened, you know, without kind of that fear of judgment. You know, I was talking earlier about, you know, fearful of losing my job, and I was kidding. I mean, obviously I wasn't, you know, because I think Copyblogger, I mean, we do have a good, I think, environment of that, you know, of feeling safe saying, hey, you know, we screwed this up, but here's what we can do with it moving forward. But also a culture of learning from your mistakes, which I think is just as important as a safety culture, a culture of, okay, this mistake was made, now let's be proactive about putting something in place so that it doesn't happen again.
Right. At the same time, you think about it, you know, that anxiety, you know, a little bit of anxiety is healthy because it keeps you on your toes and, like, you know, so you're alert and you're, you know, sober when you're making decisions, and you're checking twice, three times if you have to. And so a little anxiety is healthy, but, you know, if that's overriding the theme through your work job, then that's, of course, not healthy.
Yep. Absolutely. Okay, so your third and final mistake that you want to talk about
today. All right, so this one was a big one, and this is kind of – so let me boil this down. So when I got into this business of writing, you know, copywriting and stuff, I was – this is probably surprising. I was a big snob. I was obstinate. I was unteachable, and I still am in a lot of ways, but I like to think that, you know, in the last 20 years I've wisened and matured a little bit. But so I came out, you know, in, from, you know, degree in English literature into the marketing advertising world with a chip on my shoulder, thinking that nobody could teach me anything. I needed to learn things, but I was not at all like accepting of criticism, of instruction, you know, rejection hurt really, really bad. And so I would just protect myself and just ignore people who would try to help me. And I would listen, shake my head, but then go and do my own thing. And that was just what happened was, you know, so the problem there was just it drew out my learning curve, right? You know, instead of taking the teaching people were giving me and then, you know, honing and improving my craft that way, I was determined to do it on my own because I had it already figured out. And that's just an emotionally unhealthy place to be. So it took some time. It just says, you know, events of humbling and just coming, you know, sort of a softening of the heart and thinking that, you know, this is not all about me and I need to recognize other people and that they have things to teach me and that I can be taught and that I don't know it all. So that was, you know, sort of a large sort of teaching moment for me. And it's continually kind of, you know, I think for all of us, we have to recognize when we are involved with criticism, when we meet new people, when we meet people who are older than us or even younger than us, we have to ask the question, do they have something they can teach me? You know, we need to be open to those opportunities to learn from them, no matter who it is and what the situation is. And of course, you know, I think someone who deals with criticism maturely always asks the question, is there any truth in what they're saying? And then they sift the chaff out of and keep the wheat. So that's the sort of thing that you have to do. And that's a great way. It's the only way that we can learn and grow. But early in my life, I was like not interested in that.
Was there a specific event at all that helped change your mind on that or just a gradual maturation process, you think?
I think a little bit of both. I remember, you know, it was a gradual maturation process. And of course, you know, my wife has just been so incredibly gracious and forthcoming with information and which has helped me grow. But, you know, there were a few moments too, like I asked John Carlton to help me, you know, like I kind of just sucked up. I knew John Carlton, you know, legendary copywriter. I said, I'm going to ask him, get his take on this email newsletter, sales letter that I was writing. Part of me, to be honest, was like, I wanted to do it. So he'd say, you are a stud, you know. But what he came back with was, you're lazy and, you know, you're missing so many steps. And what he told me, like, brought everything that I'd been learning up to that 5 years, like the light bulb went off and everything that he said finally made sense to me. And part of that was, you know, that was sort of a watershed moment for me too, because I saw how, you know, even though he wasn't a mentor, but he was mentoring me in a sense, how that can help and improve a writer's, you know, craft, because of, you know, at some point you hit a wall and you, from a very subjective standpoint, you're learning, but then you have somebody come from out the outside, say something to you and a problem or an issue that's been vexing you ever since finally becomes very clear. And so at that point, I really kind of started seeing the value of listening to people and actively looking for feedback and actually taking that feedback in, looking for mentors and looking for coaches and looking for people, you know, who were better than me that I could study from.
Yeah, you know, and you know, specifically with respect to online marketing, you know, the song that ends each one of these episodes by the head and the heart, they say, you know, I wish I was a slave now to an age-old trade. Mm. And that was, you know, there's a reason why that's there, not just because the song sounds good, but, you know, because so much of what we do and what we teach when it comes to online marketing is based on age-old principles and has been done before, you know, and people have blazed that trail and shown how to do it. And so it's so important. And I, you know, I fight this all the time, wanting to just kind of go off my instinct or guess or what I think is right. But, you know, we don't really need to do that. You know, it's so important to step back sometimes and realize that there are so many people that we can learn from, and so much out there. So I think that's a great lesson.
I believe so too.
Yes. Well, you know, next week we're going to flip the script here, and we're going to talk about successes and what we can learn from our successes. You know, I think the main point of these two episodes really is just the importance of constant learning, but doing so intentionally, you know, because there's so many little events that come up, whether it's a failure or a success, that we can learn from. And, you know, just like the details in the aggregate make the difference, you know, those little lessons that we can learn, you know, little or, you know, some of them big, you know, those in the aggregate are going to make the big difference in us growing and developing both individually, professionally, and with, you know, with whatever our goals are in terms of online marketing. So any final thoughts here, Damien,
before we wrap up? Yeah, I think it would, I think it would be a lot of fun, right? So our copy blogger meetings, there's a tradition of karaoke, right? Every time we get together. And Jared is, right, he is the boy band stud of karaoke. And so I think what we need to do is somehow record one of the songs you sing and then share it on the next episode of The Lead. Because, you know, I think our audience deserves that.
Don't you think that would be more appropriate to go in the failure episode than these?
No. Not at all, Jared.
I might have to make myself scarce that night.
We'll find you, buddy.
I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it. Well, hey, man, safe travels. Looking forward to seeing you tomorrow. And looking forward to sharing this episode and the next one with all the listeners of The Lead.
Absolutely. Take care, buddy.
All right, you too.
Bye-bye.
Thank you all for listening to this episode of The Lead. If you enjoyed this episode, if you've been enjoying past episodes, please consider giving the show a rating or a review on iTunes. We would greatly appreciate it. And don't forget to go to authorityrainmaker.com. Get all of the details on our live training event that is coming this May in Denver. You will not want to miss it. All right, we will be back in 2 weeks with the completion of our two-part series here that highlights a few failures, a few successes, and most importantly, the lessons that we learned from them so that you can learn those lessons as well. Until then, talk to you soon, everybody.
So I wish I was a slave to an age-old trade. Lord, have mercy on my rough and rough.